Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm just flesh and bone, but more importantly, I'm a soul. And that soul is accountable to one being. One being.
Yep.
And really two, temporarily, because also your wife. But, you know, one, you should be accountable to your spouse because that is a spiritual union.
Like your church.
Exactly. Like the bride of Christ and Christ come together. That is what marriage is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But I mean this in the most, it used to impact me. I mean this in the most serious way. I literally don't care about what people say about me. I couldn't care
less. How long did it take you to get to that point?
Years.
Yep.
It takes years. And you grow a thicker skin, and or you start to realize what really matters in life. I mean, I've had an unbelievably blessed life. Been doing this now. It'll be 12 years on June 5th.
Such a young man to
and
do
I'm
it.
So young.
Yeah, so praise God. I mean, I've been all across the world. I've met with world leaders. I've flown in Air Force One, got to know a president. Hopefully he becomes president again. We get to, you know, I have an amazing family. The podcast, Turning Point USA, all that stuff. And so you experience that and you're like, what actually matters? What matters is your relationship with the divine, your relationship with your family, your kids, and maybe a close collection of friends, and your relationship with the truth.
That's Charlie Kirk before Donald Trump won re-election, obviously. But gosh, it's hard to say anything about Charlie Kirk that he hasn't already said in such eloquent words. Let's get to our guest. Joe Concha joins us, Fox News contributor, writer at the Washington Examiner as well. Joe, I mean, I don't even have a question to ask you. There's so much on our plate today as Americans. What are your thoughts today?
Well, when you're numb, it's hard to think too much. You know, I couldn't believe when I saw that on social media. And unfortunately, you know, you knew, you know, when you saw it, where he was struck, that he kept hearing, like, you know, maybe he has a pulse, maybe he's been stabilized. And I just thinking, I don't think so. And then, you know, I remember the fact that he was at Fox just a couple of weeks before, and he was hosting Fox and Friends Weekend, and he brought his family there, and his daughter, maybe you've seen her on Fox by now, she's probably maybe 3 years old. And once the show was over, she ran onto the set and gave him a big hug. And you never saw him smile bigger. And I think that's the thing about Charlie. Like, yeah, great career, turning point, starting that at 18 from scratch and going to where he is now, where you have millions of followers, you're selling out every venue, and you're actually affecting presidential campaigns. I mean, Trump will tell you that he probably helped, Charlie did, help flip Arizona back to Trump. But in the end, it was all about his faith. It was all about his family. And that was everything to him. And that's like the part here where I'm numb, because I have young kids, not as young as Charlie's, but I mean, they've been robbed of their father. For what? For what? Because this guy said some things that you may have disagreed with. And by the way, like, if you have a disagreement with him, he literally would say, come to the front during his Turning Point USA events and say, all right, whoever disagrees with me most, I want to talk to you first. And the debates were civil. Like, they were actually, you know, he did it with a smile.
Yeah.
And that's how it's supposed to be. But the left doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. They want to win debates by violence or death. And we're seeing it more and more. And I'm sorry, between Trump and Charlie Kirk and Steve Scalise and Rand Paul, I'm sorry, I'm seeing a pattern here, and I don't want to hear anything otherwise.
You know, I know you cover the media quite a bit on a normal day, and we saw MSNBC or whatever the heck they're called now fire Dowd, who made those heinous remarks. I saw Stephen Colbert's message. It seemed pretty reasonable. I thought, okay, good for you that you didn't, you know, take it an opportunity to do something embarrassing. I think it's dizzying right now for people probably like you and me who were so in the thick of it. It's kind of hard. It's like, I want to run this direction. Now I want to run that direction. What's your advice to people who are consuming just the amount of information that we can consume in this day and age?
Well, that's the thing, right? I think social media, it's constant, right? And I was just on with John and Sandra, and I'm sorry about the noise behind me. On Fox News. And, you know, the question was like, well, do you think we'll get back to a point where, you know, the rhetoric is more civil? And I said, I'm not optimistic about that, because with social media, all I know is after the two Trump assassination attempts, literally like 2 weeks after Trump was nearly assassinated in Butler, Pennsylvania, you have Tim Walz out there saying, like, he's a threat to democracy and we must stop him. And then you have Dan Goldman, who's the poor man's Adam Schiff in Congress, saying that Donald Trump needs to be not, you know, beaten, eliminated. Like, this language, it's intentional, right? And 98% of people will be like, oh, well, you know, that's just political hyperbole, and he really just means beat Trump and make sure he doesn't get back into office. There's that 2% that take this stuff seriously, and Ryan Ruth and nearly assassinated the president 1 year ago today. It was on September 13th at Trump International, and literally his manifestos echoed exactly what Democrats were saying on the campaign trail. So words have consequences, and I have a feeling we're going to revert right back to the Hitler, fascist, authoritarian stuff probably within 2 weeks.
Yeah, that might be too long of a prediction. I think it
I know,
even
I'm
take,
being generous.
You're being very generous. We're speaking with Joe Concha, Fox News contributor and writer at the Washington Examiner. You know, I ask myself, I was talking about this a little bit. I think I was talking about this yesterday before this happened, but just the people talk about Donald Trump and his rhetoric. Jen Psaki has been, gosh, she's just, I can't even. The idea
that, human being.
Yes, simply. But people talk about Donald Trump and the way he speaks. And you've been covering politics, you've been covering government and the news for a long time, the media. I feel like Donald Trump showed up to respond to rhetoric. I feel like Donald Trump's was the first person who stood up and said, we're not going to take this any longer. The kind of bullying that was coming from the other side of the political aisle. Like, he became a voice for the voiceless, and in a fight that we weren't even engaged in, that we were just used to losing. But for whatever particular reason, rhetoric is only ascribed to Donald Trump. I actually don't think that he's really been as bad as he's accused of being. He's just pushing back, and that's apparently a great sin.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump are cut from the same cloth. They make common sense arguments, and the left doesn't like that very much, but because forever they got to control the narrative, especially through the media. And now we've seen the great equalizers come, right? Fox News, and then X owned by Elon Musk. Yeah. Suddenly, well, you know, you don't get to control the narrative anymore, and they don't like that because they're losing power. They're losing the argument, quite frankly. And that's why, like, even when we saw with this poor woman that was stabbed on that train in Charlotte, by a madman who was arrested 14 times prior, 14. I mean, for violent crimes, by the way. She had no business. Even his own mother said he had no business being out on the street, and you still would turn on CNN and they're defending him. Like, so yeah, if we're gonna push back against that, it's not even like a Republican versus Democrat argument or red versus blue. It's common sense versus chaos. So Trump chooses common sense, and I guess they like chaos because chaos is a ladder and it keeps him in power.
Joe Concha speaking with us right now. I want to shift because it is September 11th, and I was kind of mentioning at the beginning of the show that the whole year, once it hits September, if you're planning in media, you know that September 11th is going to be a particular kind of show. And then this happens yesterday, and it just becomes even more burdensome to think about who we are as a country and why we are the way we are as a country. And patriots like Charlie Kirk fighting for the greatness of what this country is. It's such a tragic loss to lose him yesterday in this horrible way. When you think of September 11th, 24 years later, you're raising kids who only know about it from their history books like I am. Yeah. What's your reflection?
Well, I was in New York that day. I wasn't downtown. I was supposed to have a meeting right next door to the World Trade Center, and then it got canceled like 2 days before that. So I doubt I would have died or anything like that. But it's like, but you just kind of like replay that in your mind. And I lost friends there, including a guy named Paul Aquaviva, who I did a TV show with in high school. Like, that's when I got started in TV, believe it or not. And Paul was in the World Trade Center, unfortunately, at Cannon Fitzgerald. His wife, Courtney, who I also went to high school with, even elementary school, Courtney, for that matter, was pregnant with his second child. So imagine going to that funeral and seeing her, you know, 8 months. So I go back to that. But then if I'm comparing like now and then, from a political perspective, I remember George W. Bush, and he goes to Yankee Stadium for Game 3 of the World Series just a couple of weeks after 9/11. And he's about to throw out the first pitch, and he's in the bowels of Yankee Stadium kind of warming up. And he's about to walk out, and then Derek Jeter stops him. He's a shortstop, was a shortstop of the Yankees at the time, captain. And Jeter says, do not throw from the front of the mound. He says, throw from the rubber, or else they will boo you. And Bush kind of does the nod. All right, thank you, Derek. I appreciate it. So then he goes out there with a bulletproof vest on, mind you, and a jacket, you know, pretty cool night, and throws a perfect strike, and the crowd roars, and they're going USA, and you're like, a Republican president was at Yankee Stadium, and the whole place was chanting USA for him. Republicans, Democrats, didn't matter. It was red, white, and blue that night. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, all right, can we ever get back to that? And my answer is no, we can't, because I'm seeing just with Charlie Kirk alone. Like, you think that it would just be universal condemnation. Instead, go to Blue Sky sometime, which is an absolute loony bin. And you see people posting videos. Forget, like, writing, like, snarky stuff. Celebrating this, laughing about it, saying Charlie Kirk deserved it. And then you see Matthews out on MSNBC saying the same thing. You know, basically, you know, he said some hateful things. And what comes around goes around. And Katie Couture is just sitting there nodding her head. It's like, all right, we're lost. We're completely lost.
We're not the same. That is for certain.
No.
Joe, Donald Trump's still going to be at Yankee Stadium tonight, right? That's still the plan?
Yeah. Yankees Tigers, 7:05 p.m. Eastern. He'll be there for 9/11.
How do you see that going?
I would hope. When it's 9/11 and the death of Charlie Kirk, that it's not going to be like some sort of like booze or anything like that. If you do that, then I'm sorry. You can't just hold that for a couple minutes while the president maybe walks out, throws out the first pitch. I'm not sure exactly what he'll be doing there. Maybe he'll just be watching the game like he has with the Super Bowl and the Daytona 500, U.S. Open, so on. So I would hope that people on 9/11 at least would show some humanity and just, if you have a problem with the guy, maybe just keep it to yourself just this one night and just let's remember all those folks that died needlessly in 9/11. That's all.
You know, I think to myself about Charlie Kirk's happy warrior willingness to speak out and say, you know, like, it's cool to be conservative. It's cool to say, you know, to want to start a family.
We're the cool kids now.
Yes.
Yeah.
He mainstreamed it in a way that makes me realize, I think you probably experienced this too, that there are so many conservatives among us. They've just been so quiet for so long. I think that people need to own that. It doesn't have to be obnoxious, but maybe if people see how many of us there are, maybe something will change. Maybe not, but maybe.
Maybe. All I know is that Trump said earlier today that he thinks that Charlie Kirk could have been president one day. And when you think about it, yeah, he's only 31. He's built this movement. He is insanely articulate. Obviously, he knows how to debate. He does so in an optimistic, happy way. He knows his stuff, can do interviews great. Knows how to rally a crowd. There is a performative aspect to running for president now, as we may have heard.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's smart as a whip, despite not going to college, which shows you how overrated college is. So, yeah, could he have been president, in 15 years from now? Absolutely. Why couldn't he?
Yeah, amen to that. He was a breath of fresh air and sorely missed. Joe, thank
Absolutely.
You for being with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Annie.
Take care. Bye-bye. Fox News contributor, writer at the Washington Examiner, author of the book, which... Boy, if you need a pick-me-up, the greatest comeback ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. A must-read. I consider it a must-listen-to. The audiobook is narrated by Joe Concha. It's the one I was listening to when I went to Washington, D.C. at the end of April, and I walked around the National Mall listening to Joe Concha read me the story of Donald Trump's epic comeback. Maybe the best, the greatest comeback ever. Let's take a break. At 1:30, we're going to speak with Governor Mike Kehoe. We're going to talk to him about September 11th. We're going to talk to him about Charlie Kirk. And if we have time, we'll talk about redistricting and other things that are happening here in the state of Missouri. We'll be right back.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.